Hello and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, in honor of the election, we are looking at the political comedy film Wag the Dog, directed by Baltimore native Barry Levinson. With me here today to talk about Wag the Dog is Professor Marie Westhoff. Professor Westhoff, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So I could definitely tell how excited you were to get me to watch this and do this show in honor of election. This is a really funny film for me, and it's not too far-fetched if you really think about it.
It's not far-fetched at all. And I think it's Barry Levinson's best film because it's his funniest film.
And it definitely, this film, it ranks among like the great satires. Like, this film is the politics, what network was to the world of television, what The Player was to the world of movies.
And Pret-a-Porter was to the fashion industry. It's an insider's look, but this is more tongue-in-cheek and more fantastical.
Yeah, it's definitely more humorous, where those films were a bit more cynical and not going quite for a comedic role.
And not going quite so far into the realm of absurdity.
Yeah, because definitely the funny part of this film is just once they get this thing started and they get this idea, they just go all the way down that rabbit hole. They just, let's see how deep we can go for this.
That's right. And if something goes wrong, you just pivot and try something else.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting looking, I mean, it holds up well today. I mean, very well today, especially in this election. But even like back in the day, you could sort of see that because a lot of people made parallels to, you know, this in the war against Albania to, during the 80s when the invasion of Grenada. And even this was 1997, obviously the Clinton era where he always had a lot of scandals going on. And this was actually not too far from the Lewinsky scandal. And it was some people brought, when this movie came out, they drew parallels to that, the Lewinsky scandal, along with the Al-Shifa bombing.
And the George Bush administration. This was actually made before Clinton was accused of misconduct with Monica Lewinsky. So it's just interesting that would happen so closely after it. And then we come to this election. There's all kinds of scandals, sexual scandals, political scandals. It's they knew something.
It wouldn't be. It's never politics if there isn't some sort of scandal going on.
That's true.
Especially if it's a sex scandal. Yeah, sex scandal. The more sex scandals, the better.
And I know. I love how they made it the Firefly Girl in the. It just sounds so innocent and sweet. Mm-hmm. And
what is is that like a Girl Scout?
No, there's no such thing.
Oh, I thought it was like a gymnastics thing or something.
No, I think it's meant to. It's meant to be a Girl Scout without having to bring the Girl Scouts into it.
And you know, I was looking up the. The film focuses, I'll have to look this up, but it talks about the aspect of astroturfing, which is sort of this concept of you're deep into something you shouldn't be. You got something going on. You got to find some way to mask it. And I think that, you know, that's sort of what they're talking about. It's interesting. This is a topic that's actually not just used in politics. They use it in any business. Any business that's in trouble, they get somebody to spend, let's get away from this and focus on something that, you know, will make us look a lot better.
Well, actually, in this election, there's something that they're calling catch and kill, which is a story that the National Enquirer had an allegation of a Playboy playmate who said that Donald Trump assaulted her. And they got the story to kill the story. Hmm. So that's something that just came out recently. And so these kind of shenanigans are, I guess, pretty widespread.
Mm-hmm. And going back to a TV show, have you seen The Wire?
I love The Wire.
I remember when it's the mayor, Carchetti, and it's the election season. At the last day or so at the election season, his opponent photoshops him in this courtroom getting a guy who's this known drug dealer and murderer out free, even though there was a Photoshop, it didn't happen. But because it was on such short notice and that they don't have any time at all to respond back to it, by the time they do it, the election's over, that it worked very well, even though that's completely fake in a Photoshop.
Well, and then they use Photoshop in this movie, too, to create a whole ad campaign, which is very, very funny.
The one thing, though, we talk about it could happen today. Like, you wouldn't put it past, I don't think I would put it past any politician to try to do something like this today. However, I would say I'm not sure if people would be so buying into it with the modern technology happening today. I think people would be looking up like, wait a second, we're looking at Albania. Nothing's going on there. There's no battle. There's no bombings. What's going on here? And they go like this, you know, and with the character of the old shoe guy, people would be like, hey, wait a second. This guy's a convict. He did some pretty nasty stuff, and he's doing like this 30-year sentence. This guy's not a war hero. He's never served in the army or something. I think like It's funny, but I feel like now today is with more modern technology, with the internet, where you can look anything up. I don't think I'm not sure if you could quite get away with this. I think people would be too wise. Or if you did something like this, you would have to get even more in depth, even more like dive more into it and make it seem realistic
and make more fake proof. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, in this day and age, you would just text your friend in Albania and mm-hmm. say, "What's really happening there?" Or they would be texting you saying,
like, "What's going on?
What's going on? Like, none of this here. Is going on, right?" Actually, when they first brought up Albania, I thought, "Is that a real place?" Because I wouldn't put it past them to make up a place. But I love how they drag Jim Belushi into it.
And Jim Belushi's like talking in native Albanian language.
They have so many wonderful cameos and so many wonderful actors in this movie.
Yeah, that's one big, like, there a huge cast of people who were just huge in the 90s. You got Robert De Niro, you got Dustin Hoffman, Anne Heche, Kirsten Dunst in one of her first film roles. You got Woody Harrelson. You got a brief cameo from William H. Macy. You got Dennis Leary in it. And the political opponent is Craig T. Nelson. I mean, that's just everybody. Everybody's in this movie.
And Willie Nelson.
Oh, yeah. Willie Nelson, too. And it's funny. I love Dustin Hoffman in this role. He seems to shine a bit when he's working with Levinson, because he also did Rain Man.
That's right.
And watching this, he was great as the producer. And it was talked about that I'm pretty sure if you heard of the notorious Hollywood producer Robert Evans.
Actually, Hoffman's character is said to have been based on Robert Evans. And he has Evans' work habits and mannerisms and quirks and clothing style and his hairstyle and the huge glasses. And the real Evans is said to have joked, "I'm magnificent in this film."
Evans is such a character. He's a guy that, you know, if you watch like a lot of comedians like joke about him, like Bob Odenkirk, when he said he was creating Saul, the character of Saul Goodman, he was somewhat inspired by Robert Evans.
Okay, I can see it.
He used to do a show, I'm going a bit off topic, but he used to do a comedy show on the HBO in the 90s called Mr. Show. And he was this one sketch where it's God, and it's God's audiobook, and he's dressed like Robert Evans. He was like, "Yep, I'm, you know, I'm God, and we're doing, you know," he's acting like a studio head more than God, but it's funny.
Well, he did do The Godfather. He did work on The Godfather.
Yep,
and Rosemary's Baby, Chinatown,
Love Story. Yeah, every big movie in that time he did. But anyway, so
but yeah, Hoffman's great, and that tagline that he keeps saying, "This is nothing."
He brings up every movie he had to work on that had this worst problem, and even when the planes crashed or the guy's dead, they're just like, "Oh, this is nothing."
Yeah,
I do love the death scene where he's like, "Oh no, he didn't shoot him. Scratch that."
Yeah, it's just got so many great moments. And De Niro is wonderful in it, too. He's sort of professorial. He seems very serious. But he has sort of this sinister undertow to him. You can see he's capable of dastardly things. And the whole scene with the CIA, you know, given what has been in the news lately with the FBI, I just think has even more resonance that, wow, whose side are these guys on?
I do like the scene when the CIA guy is like, "We've checked everything. There's nothing going on in Albania." And Robert De Niro is almost able to turn the entire conversation around. He's like, "How do you know?" He was like, "Well, you need to check those things again. How much are you paying for your defense budget? Are you really checking those things? You know, how many times do you check?" And he just completely changes the subject around, so he doesn't even know what they're talking about anymore.
Yeah. I like the scene in the limousine where they're trying to make the most of a photo op. It's like, where can we have the president show up where it's raining?
Yeah.
Because that would look better on camera. It would look more, you know, sad and it's not raining there. Well, take him someplace else where it is raining.
Yeah, then like we got to get a little girl in there and give it, you know, have her give him a set of flowers, and she talks to him in the native Albanian language.
And then the scene with the coffin, and they actually rub it with a pork chop or something so the dog will follow it.
And then the part where they create this old folk song called "The Old Shoe."
The old shoe. Yeah, and then they go back and they make an old record and they put it retroactively in the Library of Congress.
And they have the woman just give the suggestion to the one guy. He's like, "Wasn't there an old folk song called The Old Shoe?"
It sounds like there would be. It sounds really plausible.
Yeah, and then they start the protest of them throwing the shoes up on the wire.
On the wires.
And that starts a whole national craze.
And actually, after the movie was done, they left some of the shoes up there, and they stayed there for years.
Wow. I mean, probably wouldn't look any different from a lot of other times when people throw their shoes up on the trees.
So. Right. Yeah, it was interesting, though, to see how you start a craze.
And so another one is Anne Heche, and She was really big at this time because I know she was in this movie in like the exact same year she was in another big film, Donnie Brasco. But nowadays, I don't really hear much from her.
That's because she's not involved with Ellen? Wasn't she with Ellen?
I don't remember. So she's just kind of not doing movies anymore?
I haven't seen her in anything in a long time now that you've mentioned it.
Yeah.
She's terrific in this one, though.
And she is very funny.
Yeah, she looks like, she totally looks like a person who has the ear of the president. And I love that scene where she's telling Dustin Hoffman what she can do. And she says, what do you want me to have? Not the president, it's the Ari Fleischer guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the press agent. And then she makes a phone call and he taps his ear mic and parrots the very thing she says. Yeah.
It doesn't make press agents look very good if you're just basically a tool.
Yeah, well, I don't know if the press agents usually end up looking very good.
Yeah.
Now, the funny thing, you mentioned the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Apparently, these three guys, De Niro, Hoffman, and Levinson, actually met with Bill Clinton.
Oh, really?
And he said, oh, so what's this movie about? And so De Niro looks at, you know, Levinson. Levinson looks at Hoffman. And Hoffman said he didn't know what to say. So he said he just started tap dancing. He says, I don't even know what I said.
And I noticed that this was based on a novel called American Hero.
Yes.
I was wondering, have you read it? Or looked?
I haven't, because I just can't imagine it being funnier than the book. And since the book's usually better and the movie's so good, I think that I'm sticking with the movie.
Okay.
Apparently, it doesn't follow the book perfectly anyway. I think they used it as a jumping off point.
Okay. And well done was the screenplay. And it was by David Mamet and Hilary Henkin. And it's kind of Howard Hawks, like the very fast, quick paced dialogue that's back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, especially when they're. When Dennis Leary's in it, and they're just starting to develop the idea of this whole war, and they keep going on and on and on. Like, we need to have leopard skin. What time is it? 3:03. Well, that's what we're going to call this division. They're the 3:03. And like, they're going to wear leopard skin, and they're going to do this. And it just goes back and forth and back and forth. It's pretty funny.
He's the fad king, right?
Dennis Leary?
He comes up with the fads. Yeah, the fad king.
Yeah,
great stuff. By the way, Craig T. Nelson and Barry Levinson used to do a stand-up comedy routine together early in their careers.
Interesting.
Can't quite picture Craig T. Nelson doing comedy.
No, he's always the straight, stern guy.
Yes, coach.
Coach, yep. That's what I remember him from. And it was interesting. I also noticed that the music, it was done by Mark Knopfler. And as a rock and roll fan, I know him most as the lead guy, guitar player for Dire Straits. But I've looked, he's done quite a few... has quite a few composing credits. Like one thing I noticed, he also did Princess Bride.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, though, when I think of the movie, I think about the fake songs.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
The old shoe and the, you know, the America the Great, whatever the song is. And they're not on the soundtrack.
Really?
Yeah, they left those, you know, fake songs off the soundtrack. I think that's like the whole point of the soundtrack.
That's why you would want to buy the soundtrack for that fake song. I do love that whole like ensemble, like patriotic song.
The American Dream.
It almost feels like that We Are the World song.
Actually, that was intentional.
That was
because
intentional.
Willie Nelson was part of We Are the World, and it evoked that whole studio session.
Mm-hmm. And just even that, hey, can we make this thing sound grainy and old? And that's just so
scratchy.
Funny how they
get
scratchy.
Yeah.
And it was also another thing. There's some very good, it was a very well shot film. It's not just a funny movie, which it very well is, but it's also, there's some nice, it's got a good cinematography in there. Like there's the one shot when it's in the morning, and it's that they're at the producer's house, and it's got all the fog, and that's a really nice composed shot. And this was by a three-time Oscar winner for cinematography, Robert Richardson.
Well, he knows what he's doing. It is a beautifully shot movie.
And just go backtrack a little bit. You were talking about how since this was the 90s and it does talk about a sex scandal, you can't help but think of Bill Clinton when you think of this movie. There's another film that came out around the same time that was said to be based on life of Bill Clinton. It was called Primary Colors.
Yes.
Have you seen that
Travolta.
One?
With John Travolta. Yeah. Yeah, it's actually supposed to be about the Clintons. It's not a secret that it's about the Clintons. It's not as engaging because life is not as funny as made-up story. Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if Clinton ever got annoyed. Like, here's one movie kind of taking a poke at him and this the sex scandal, and now here's another film. And I know that film didn't quite make him look like the best person there was with Primary Colors either.
Well, that movie that came out, W, didn't really make George W. Bush look better either. Mm-hmm. I think that's just the nature of a political movie.
Yeah, just always make the presidents look bad no matter who they are. And so The ending of the film was really interesting for me because it seems like they've won, they've conquered. He's reelected. The whole scandal's been forgotten, completely forgotten about. But at the end, we see a news report about there's this radical group in Albania, and there's another, and they take responsible for a recent bombing. Now, I want to get your take on this. Now, do you think that this is them just keep on going with the story so he can just gain his popularity more, or is this real? Is there like actual consequences because they've made the story, and there's consequences that they've actually caused a war?
Well, I think it's the second. I mean, I think you can read it either way, but I think it's more interesting and it's a better story if, even after they pull out and, you know, it's all fake anyway, that you can't really stop something once you've started the propaganda part of it.
Mm-hmm. Just, you never know how, you know, it's something that you see that sometimes in politics where you think it's going to be this quick, easy thing, and then you think it's over with, like, uh-oh, we still got a lot to go, and it goes on for a long time.
Yeah, and people mysteriously disappear.
Mm-hmm. I do like that they talk about how they read the first draft of the Kennedy assassination. It's like they thought he was killed by drunk driving. And then they talked about what was the other one? It was, I think they were talking about how the beginning of the Gulf War was the bombing down this factory. It was like, we did that in a studio. That was all models. Like,
yes.
Really? It's like, how do you, it was like, I don't, it was like, was it? No, but you asked, so that's the point.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why so many of the things in it seem plausible, because you find yourself questioning what you already think is true.
And just how many times over the years have we had these just little quick invasion wars? You know, not even America, because Britain has done that too, where it's just these quick things. They go on for like at the most like a month or two, and then they're over. And then like 5 years later, it's like, oh yeah, that was a thing.
Right. And like, where, what happened there?
And you just kind of wonder, what was the point of all that again?
Somebody had a point to make, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. And so, how was the original reception of this film? I mean, we talked about how you talked about how the awkwardness when they had to meet Bill Clinton. Did this get any controversy? Did like people say, "Oh, this is a mockery of politics," or was it mostly like, "This is great"?
I think most people thought this is great. I think the Monica Lewinsky scandal helped the movie a lot because people watched it thinking it was about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was, and it, they talked about it was that, and at the same time there was this. I'm not sure if you know, because I don't remember this as I was like four, but there was the Al Shifa bombing. It was at the same time, and there was like that. They were like, oh, he's trying to use this thing to help cover up the Lewinsky thing.
Right. Yeah, and I think, but see, I don't think the timeline works, but they happened so close afterwards. It's kind of like the question you asked about Albania. It was like, did that happen because of that, or did that happen in spite of that? Or is that just always going to happen?
Just a coincidence, natural coincidence, yeah. And so we talk about the career of Barry Levinson now. To me, I've seen a good deal of his films. I'll just run off the list. I've seen this film, The Natural, Diner, Rain Man, Good Morning Vietnam, and Bugsy.
And Tin Man.
Tin Man. Well, that's all of the six I've seen, but to me, he seems like a bit of a hit or miss director, because I haven't really seen. I know he did another political film. It was in 06. It was called Man of the Year with Robin Williams. And I know that was kind of like a John Stewart-like person actually becomes president. And I heard that was kind of a bomb. It seems like he has had quite a few bombs lately. So he seems like he's on a little bit of a down. Just what were your thoughts on his career as a director?
I like a lot of his movies a lot. But I have sat through some movies of his that I thought just didn't quite hit the mark. But he's a local guy, so you mm-hmm. you want to cut him some slack. That's why anytime he comes out with a new movie, people will go see it anyway, just to see if it's, you know, one of his high points.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. As far as local Baltimore scene, you can't help but like Diner.
Right. It has, mm-hmm. and it has so many people in it who went on to bigger things.
Yep. Well, Kevin Bacon.
Ellen Barkin.
Yep. Yeah. Mickey Rooney.
Mickey Rourke.
Mickey Rourke. Yeah. Sorry, not Mickey Rooney. Yeah, great cast. And it was part of a Baltimore trilogy. It was that. Another one was called Avalon.
Mm-hmm.
And was it, you said Tin Man? Was that part of it?
I think so. It's Danny DeVito, and I can't remember the other lead, and they're aluminum siding salesman. Mm-hmm. I saw that with my mom in the theater when it came out because it was Barry Levinson, and the performances were just okay. It was just an okay movie. I was not like this one. I think Wag the Dog is really a high watermark for him.
It's his best. And have you seen Avalon, the other Baltimore movie you
did? I did see it. I don't remember it, though. I remember it being very sentimental and nostalgic.
Okay. And so I guess we could talk about, since we're getting on the topic of Baltimore filmmakers, maybe what are your thoughts on sort of the Baltimore film scene? Because only him and John Waters are the only two people that really come to mind when I think of the Baltimore film scene. So are there any other people besides those two that I'm forgetting?
That do directing?
Yeah.
Well, I have to sort of, not really Baltimore, but I think about Ed Norton, because I think he's getting into more directing, and he's more of
a hometown
boy.
He's actually from here, this city, Columbia.
Yeah. And the guy who draws the Boondocks. He actually went to Oakland Mills High School.
Hmm. Then one person, I know they have a scholarship for him in Towson, Charles S. Dutton. I know he's more of an actor.
Oh, yes, yes. Rock.
Yeah.
That was his show, Rock.
Yep, and he was in Rudy, and I know, I think my grandmother, when she was coming to visit us, she said she met him on a plane.
What'd she say about him?
She said she was very nice. She said, oh, I like your movies. And he was like, well, thank you, ma'am. Another Baltimore guy. What are your thoughts on John Waters?
I love John Waters. I think he is so funny. I can't say I really understand his movies. Mm-hmm. I enjoy watching them just because they're so bizarre. But whenever he introduces a movie at the Maryland Film Festival, you know it is going to be something really weird.
Yeah.
He does. He's just unapologetically odd. And
he,
I like
that
about
him. Yeah,
he
does tell the funniest. Whenever they're interviewing him, he does tell very funny stories. But yeah, that Pink Flamingos movie, I was like, that's a bit much for me.
Yeah, you know, having a 300-pound drag queen as your main actor, that's a statement.
Yeah.
He's actually, from what I understand, he's a very avid reader and has tons and tons of books in his house.
It does seem like he's a very intelligent guy. He knows what he's talking about. And he always like the interviews he does. He's always very funny and stuff. So moving from Baltimore, I guess we'll keep on other political films. So maybe in this election season, what other political films would you recommend? I'll go on the list. More TV-wise, I would go with House of Cards, both the British version. I think that's really been forgotten about, and that's a really good show. They did three series of that. And then, of course, the American version. And also, I would go with something that's really scary for me is Manchurian Candidate, the original one. And then something that is, talk about a complete reversal of political, of like the outlook of politics, is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Those are all great ones. I would add Bullworth with Warren Beatty, mm-hmm. because there's this great scene where he is talking with his mouth open. He's saying, you know, basically, you know, you guys have to get your act together. Otherwise, you're never going to get rid of a guy like me. He's very funny in that. And, of course, the TV show Scandal. Because when I was having a discussion with one of my friends recently, I said, you know, all this stuff about stealing the election, I mean, do you think that could really happen? She said, yes, because I saw it on Scandal. And there mm-hmm. there is a plot device in there where they, you know, tamper with some voting machines. Mm. So, yeah, it's, you know, you watch enough TV, you start, you know, conspiracy theories sound more and more plausible.
It's just like what they say in this movie. I was like, of course the war is happening. I'm seeing it on television.
Right. And see, for some people, that's enough proof.
Mm-hmm. I do. One of the funniest quotes about politics and movies is Hunt for Red October, and it's one of the politicians who's getting involved. He's like, I'm a politician, and that means I'm a thief and I'm a liar. And when I'm not kissing babies, I'm stealing their lollipops.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
And you're talking about Bullworth. One of the funny things about the movie, the scene I liked, was when he's at the African-American church and asking, like, well, you know, why haven't you helped us with this and how haven't you helped us with this? It was like, what we really did is we shook your hands, we took pictures of with you, and we told you what you wanted to hear, and then we decided to do nothing about it.
Yeah, but you don't say that out loud. That's why that's what's great about that movie, is he actually says these things out loud.
Okay, so we're getting close to the end of my questions here. Is there anything I haven't brought up about Wag the Dog or political movies or anything else that you want to bring up now?
Well, that theme, Why Change Horses Midstream, was originally a campaign slogan for Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War. Yeah, so, you know, a lot of that stuff is great if you're a history buff. Also, the talk show phone number, 800-555-0199, mm-hmm. is the one number that is the allowable fake 800 number.
Oh, really? Meaning, because of the 555.
Because of the 555. But even 800, making it 800-555, other digits will actually get you a real number.
Hmm.
But that one is the official fake 800 number, and it's been used in other movies as well.
Yeah, because they use the 555 for every movie, right? Because that's the one area code that nobody has, so you can use it any time in movies.
Which it always, I find that very jarring, because as soon as they say 555, you know it's a fake number.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, and I was trying to bring something else up. Oh yeah, the horses in midstream. Like, those are some awful commercials.
They're awful.
Know, like, who would actually be like, you know what? Because of this ad, I'm gonna vote for this guy.
How many people even ride horses? That's the other thing. It's like, it's a car culture. Why would you use a metaphor that no one except horse lovers would relate to?
Yeah,
it's bizarre.
And it's just the one slogan over and over. Why change horses in midstream? Why change horses in midstream? That's it. All they're saying is like, well, you already elected him, so you might as well elect him again for another 4 years.
Right. What's the worst that can happen? Yeah, there's another great scene in that movie where Dustin Hoffman has written a script for the president to read, and he doesn't want to read it because it's too corny.
Yeah.
It's like, it's too corny. Of course it's too corny. And then he sort of focus groups it with all these ladies, and he delivers it.
And they all
come out crying. Because sometimes the delivery is what matters.
It's not
even what you say. It's not even changing horses midstream. It's how you say it.
Just how you deliver it.
Yeah. And so, if you can do it well enough, you can fake everybody out.
Definitely. So you've been talking about this earlier. So you're going to be bringing this into your class today. So tell us a bit how you're going to bring this and discuss this and bring it up to the election that's going on tomorrow, or as of recording Tuesday.
Tuesday is the day that I have World Cinema, and normally I would be doing a class on Russia. So I'm going to talk about Russia and give them the assignment. And then, you know, thinking about Vladimir Putin, I am going to hack my own class, and I'm going to show them Wag the Dog. Mm-hmm.
Then you should also show pictures of Putin shirtless riding on a bear.
I'll do that. I think they would enhance the whole the whole thing.
That would make a good movie, just him riding a bear into battle.
With no shirt on.
Yeah, yeah.
Somewhere, somebody right now is thinking,
that's
idea.
That's a good movie. It's probably Trump, but anyway. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about director Barry Levinson and his 1997 political film, Wag the Dog. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at armchairdirectors.podomatic.com. It will also be in podcast form soon on the Podbean page for Dragon Digital Radio. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, why change horses in midstream?